Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Ian Millhiser, who's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and the editor of Think Progress Justice. He's the author of Injustices, the Supreme Court's History of Comforting the Comfortable and Afflicting the Afflicted. And he has an article at Think Progress, Breaking, Brett Kavanaugh Thinks That Senator Susan Collins is Stupid. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ian Millhiser.
It's good to be here. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Ian. And today, Senator Susan Collins of Maine met with the Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, and she came out of it glowing, saying that we don't need to worry about his views on Roe v. Wade. He assured me that he's consistent with Chief Justice John Roberts in terms of its settled law, and therefore we all recall the famous confirmation of Chief Justice Roberts back in 2005, where he talked about stare decisis, settled law. So she's completely accepted that. I don't believe it for one second. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, Susan Collins is either really dumb or really cynical, and she thinks all of us are really dumb. So what's going on here is that we basically have a 50-49 Senate right now because Senator McCain is at home, you know, dealing with his cancer. And so if all the Democrats stick together and Susan Collins, who's a Republican, flips, Brett Kavanaugh goes down. Collins is at least nominally pro-choice. She claims that she won't vote to confirm a nominee who will overrule Roe v. Wade, but she either doesn't understand very much or she's intentionally playing dumb because, you know, she said, oh, I'm so sure because, or she at least she compared Kavanaugh to Roberts, so that Kavanaugh said he'd do the same thing that Roberts would do. And Roberts is definitely a vote to kill Roe v. Wade. And, you know, when you look at his record on the court, he has repeatedly voted against abortion rights.
That, of course, was the 4-5 decision on so-called partial birth abortion. But one of his more outrageous votes, of course, in terms of stare decisis, settled law, was Citizens United overturning 20 years of precedent.
Yeah, so they're like, this phrase stare decisis just refers to the notion that courts are supposed to follow precedent. And Roberts doesn't have very many compunctions about overruling precedent. You know, he overruled a 20-year-old case in Citizens United, which held that corporations can be prohibited from spending money on elections. You know, he's overruled longstanding antitrust rules. He's he overruled a longstanding precedent which protects unions. And then during his second term on the court, in a case called Gonzalez v. Carhart, you know, the opinion didn't use the word overruled, but in 2000, there was a state law that banned what are so-called partial birth abortions, and the Supreme Court struck down that state law. And then in 2007, Congress had passed more or less the exact same law at the federal level, and the Supreme Court upheld more or less the exact same law. The only difference was that the makeup of the Supreme Court had changed. So Roberts is not a guy who really believes that strongly in stare decisis, and he certainly doesn't believe in it very strongly when it comes to abortion. You have that Gonzalez case. You have another case out of Texas where he rejected a challenge. He was in dissent, rejected to a challenge to a really aggressive anti-abortion law. So if Kavanaugh does everything that John Roberts would do, that means that Roe v. Wade is toast.
Well, also, Susan Collins voted to confirm Gorsuch, and she got similar assurances from him, right? Which are equally worthless, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's probably going on here is that Collins wants to have plausible deniability. You know, if a nominee comes into her office and says, yes, I am going to go and overrule Roe v. Wade, then, you know, she's not going to vote for that guy because he didn't play the game. So long as the nominee plays the game, so long as they use, like, code words like settled law, then she's willing, you know, if they're willing to pretend like there's some uncertainty about what they're going to do on Roe v. Wade, she's willing to pretend that they're going to rule Roe v. Wade. But I don't think that she, you know, she doesn't know what's going on here. And ultimately, what she has to decide is this. She's the senator who's going to have to run for re-election in a blue state. She's from Maine. In her next election is in 2020. She's got to run in the blue state of Maine. And it's likely that if Kavanaugh is confirmed, if the Supreme Court doesn't overrule Roe completely by 2020, they're at least going to make some pretty sharp cuts in it. So she's not going to be able to pretend anymore. You know, the court is going to hand down its decision saying, you know, either that Roe v. Wade is overruled or that Roe v. Wade doesn't amount to much. And she's going to have to run for re-election in that environment. So if she wants to look out for herself, you know, she's been able to play this game up to this point, but I don't think it's going to last much longer for her.
And again, I'm speaking with Ian Millhiser, who's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and the editor of Think Progress Justice. He's the author of Injustices, the Supreme Court's History of Comforting the Comfortable and Afflicting the Afflicted. And he has an article at Think Progress, Breaking, Brett Kavanaugh Thinks That Senator Susan Collins is Stupid. So the thing, though, I mean, as bad as overturning Roe v. Wade will be, and I think it will have terrible implications for this country, and this red state, blue state divide will be even more profound because they're likely to kick it back to the states. So you'll have situations in red states where young women will be catching Greyhound buses to drive hundreds of miles to an abortion clinic in a blue state, and you'll have Christian vigilantes at Greyhound bus stations checking their papers to see whether they have parental consent. This is the direction the country's heading in.
Yeah, I mean, they may not even leave it to the states. I mean, once Roe v. Wade is overruled, there's no reason why Congress couldn't pass a federal abortion ban. Now, I mean, there is one reason. It may be that Republicans won't control Congress or they won't control the White House, but the minute there's a majority in Congress and the president willing to sign the bill that wants to ban abortion, if Roe v. Wade is gone, then you will see a federal ban on all abortion. And what that means is a practical matter. For rich women, it's not going to mean anything at all. Rich women will just go to Canada. But if you don't have the means to drop what you're doing, take several days off from work, fly to Canada, you know, get an abortion there and then come home, then you're going to, you know, those are the people that are going to be hurt in this regime.
Well, but though, Ian Millhiser, as bad as that portent is, what troubles me most about Kavanaugh is that when we have the most dangerous and reckless president in the history of the United States, who, as the former head of the CIA mentioned the other day, is drunk with power, this guy, Kavanaugh, wants to give him more power. That's his whole his whole outlook on presidential power. He just can't wait to empower Trump to do God knows what.
Yeah, I mean, Kavanaugh worked in the Bush White House, and what he got out of that experience is that presidents should be able to do more or less whatever they want. At least they shouldn't be impeded by criminal investigations or civil lawsuits. And, you know, maybe you can argue that past presidents were so busy that they didn't need certain distractions. But we're talking about Donald Trump here. You know, we're talking about a guy who spends hours and hours every day watching cable news and live tweeting it. I think what you see from Brett Kavanaugh, even the most charitable spin on what he's doing, is he's very obsessed with his theory of how things are supposed to work and not very focused on the real world and how it actually works.
Well, that is the problem. I mean, these guys are looking more and more like bishops and cardinals in the Catholic Church, incapable of dealing with the sex abuse scandal. I mean, your book suggests Supreme Court's history of comforting the comfortable and afflicting the afflicted. As bad as it is now, it'll be even so much worse. And in all of these confirmation hearings, nobody ever asks these conservative candidates whether they're corporatists. And it's so clear that they are, particularly in Gorsuch's case, and how much, at the end of the day, corporations will be empowered over consumers and the powerful, the rich over the poor, the corporation over the union. That is the trend. That's the reality. And these hearings are completely worthless because they never talk about the real stuff. It's all sort of dressed up in vague language. And when they're ever asked a real question, they refuse to answer it. So is this really just about the numbers? Is there any way in the world you can stop this guy? Because based on the numbers and based upon Susan Collins' ridiculous statement that this guy has assured her he's not going to overturn Roe v. Wade, which is, you know, absolutely worthless assurance, it looks like the numbers are going to go against the Democrats. Feinstein's meeting with him on Monday. I thought the Democrats weren't even going to meet with him until they got all the documentation.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what matters here is just there has to be a lot of pressure. I mean, Susan Collins has to feel that she's going to pay a price. You know, the reason why Susan Collins ultimately voted not to kill the Affordable Care Act is because she thought she'd pay a price if she did. And so if her constituents are bombarding her with calls saying, do not confirm this man, you know, I still think there's a chance that that can be stopped. And you're right. I mean, it's not just the corporate agenda that scares me. What scares me the most is that these guys don't believe in voting rights. You know, Chief Justice Roberts has wanted since the early 80s when he was in the Reagan administration to nuke what remains of the Voting Rights Act, to say that you can't win a civil rights trial if you show that a law has what's called a disparate impact. It has a greater effect on people of color than it has on white people. And if you take away the ability to win suits that way in voting rights suits, that means that there's virtually no way to win a voting rights case where you have Jim Crow type voting discrimination. That means you're going to see things that you're already seeing states preparing for. This is a county in Georgia. It's a majority black county, and they want to close down 7 of the 9 precincts, voting precincts in this county. Why do they want to do that? Because black people will vote if they have a place they can go to cast a vote. In Alabama, a while back, they passed a strict voter ID law. They said you have to have an ID to vote. And then they tried to shut down a bunch of DMVs in black areas so that black people couldn't get the ID so they could show up to cast a ballot. So that's the game. That's the end game here. You know, it's not just that these guys want to put in place a corporate agenda. It's that they want to entrench themselves permanently by making it so that, yeah, we'll still have elections in this country. But the result of the election will be preordained because the people who are inclined to vote for Democrats won't be allowed to vote.
Well, that's part and parcel of the great structural challenge the Democrats have. They have to win 8% more votes just to break even out of the gate.
Right.
And there's a study that I talked to Norm Ornstein about recently where by the year 2040, we'll have 70 Republican senators and only 30 Democrat senators because of the Electoral College and the gerrymandering. And populations are concentrating in cities in blue states where their votes are diluted. As we noticed from the last election, Hillary Clinton got 3 million plus more votes, but they didn't count. So that's the direction we're heading in. And it seems to be the job of the Supreme Court under this conservative majority that could be even more of a majority. Their job, they are the ultimate Republican activists because their job is to make the Republican Party a majority party, even if they are a minority. And this is their way of dealing with the demographic change that's happening by simply this manipulation of the law, of voting rights, and finding everything they can to maintain a tyranny of the minority.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, the future we are looking at, if they get their way, is that they want to make it so that, you know, certain votes count for more. They want to make it so that, you know, there'll still be some Democrats in Congress, but it's nearly impossible for Democrats to get a majority. And they've done that. I mean, they've done it through gerrymandering. They've done it through the Electoral College. They've done it through voter suppression laws. Some of these things, I mean, unfortunately, the Electoral College is actually in the Constitution. But, you know, some of these things are things the Supreme Court should do something about. It violates the First Amendment to engage in partisan gerrymandering. It's what's called viewpoint discrimination, because you're saying that the votes of people who agree with Republicans should count more than the votes of people who agree with Democrats. And the Supreme Court was supposed to strike it down just this last term. Justice Kennedy decided that he would rather retire and spent the whole term in a senior slump voting with his fellow Republicans. And so here we are now. I mean, it is grim. I mean, it's not, I don't think it is hopeless yet. It is essential that people turn out and vote in this November, that people should turn out and vote in 2020, because we are fast approaching the point where if people don't turn out and vote, then, you know, 4, 5, 10 years down the road, it may not matter how you vote in the election because everything will be preordained.
So just in the last couple of minutes, Ian Millhiser, what about some of the information that's coming out? I know the Democrats didn't want to meet with Kavanaugh until they got all the documentation from the National Archives, and that's been held up, and the Democrats want to make this stuff public. The Republicans don't. Feinstein is meeting with Kavanaugh on Monday, so that means that they've at least that stalling tactic is no longer being applied. Is it possible in some of this documentation there could be some smoking guns? Because I've heard rumors to that effect that he may well have broken the law, Kavanaugh, when he was so zealous when he worked for Ken Starr. But what's come out about his work with Ken Starr is the absolute, you know, almost like the Witches of Salem. I mean, we're talking about a guy that was just obsessed with Clinton's sex life and wanted the whole world to know about in the most lurid details. He also aggressively pursued documents tied to the Vince Foster suicide, which is really puts him in Alex Jones conspiracy territory.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible there's something in there that's standing and that could potentially shut him down. But frankly, I don't think you need to see that to know how to vote on this guy. I mean, he has a really thick record. You know, we know that he's against abortion, right? We know that he, like, time and time again tried to prevent the Obama administration's Environmental Protection Agency from doing its job. We know that he's very hostile to the notion of independent agencies, things like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau or the FCC or the FEC, these agencies that aren't completely under the grip of the President of the United States. You know, we know that he is against workers' rights. We know that he's, you know, when he's had the opportunity to vote on and has been hostile to voting rights. We know all of these things. And so, yeah, I mean, I'd like to know more about him, but I know enough to know that there's no good reason to vote for him.
Well, Ian Millhiser, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
All right, thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Ian Millhiser. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and the editor of Think Progress Justice. He's the author of Injustices, the Supreme Court's History of Comforting the Comfortable and Afflicting the Afflicted. And he has an article at Think Progress, Breaking Brett Kavanaugh Thinks That Senator Susan Collins Is Stupid. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.